Joining us on the WBGO Journal is the CEO of Eduscape, Alex Urea. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Doug. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Take us to the beginning of Eduscape. How did this first develop for you?
This started back in 07, almost 13 years ago. And we started as an organization that really wanted to bring not just the best resources, digital and other technology resources, into schools, but more so empower teachers to use them as part of their pedagogy, as an integral part of the tools they use to reach students and engage students and really improve their own skill sets.
And now that the coronavirus pandemic has hit, your company is certainly one that a lot of people who hadn't been reaching out to already want to know more from. You're one of the best online learning businesses for kids in the country. This has to be something that you could never have imagined, but all the tools that you're providing for teachers and students right now, first of all, has to be extremely rewarding for you.
I think what's most rewarding is that teachers are more willing to take risks now than ever before. And teachers are learning that these tools that they had at their disposal all these years and maybe were not trained as well as they could have been on, or maybe were a little anxious to use, can actually be great resources for them well beyond this time. And as we enter a new normal in education, I don't think they may remember the challenges, but I think they're going to embrace the opportunities to have learned these tools, even though they've been kind of drinking from a fire hose to try and implement their remote teaching plans. I think historically we'll look back on it and it may have some great benefits.
Tell our listeners how Eduscape really works with schools.
Well, Doug, what we do is we truly partner with schools to identify what technology resources they've either chosen or would like to choose, whether they're using Google for Education or Microsoft Office for the Classroom or other technologies in the STEM area, across the board, really, in digital citizenship. Try and help them plan what their digital transformation strategy is going to look like, and then help them implement it. And it's really from the ground up, beginning with how will our administrative staff and leadership teams use technology to communicate better with stakeholders, including teachers, their students, their parents? How will teachers use technology and other resources, including robotics, not as a enrichment activity, but integrating these things as a core part of the everyday classroom? So we not only help them identify the right resources, but we work with what they've already invested in and help them scale it to the next level by developing professional development plans and implementing them for teaching leaders so that they can reach more students, engage more students, and really help them prepare better for career readiness and future success.
We're speaking with Alex Urea, who's the CEO of Eduscape. You're a parent as well. What are you learning throughout this whole ordeal and this crisis?
That is a really good question. And I have three children, one in college and my son, and two daughters in high school. And what I'm learning is not just that I knew my kids were all different personalities and strengths and things like that, but this new modality of the way they have to learn is tapping into some areas where they of their strengths. And also I'm seeing one of my children learn a lot better in this format. She's more self-directed and has less distractions than she had before. While the other one, who's more structured, I think is finding, while she's getting her work done timely and all those things, I think she's struggling because she likes the social dynamic of the classroom a little more and doesn't get distracted. So having this structure or this really open-ended learning is just impacting the kids differently. And then my son falls right in the middle. But I also see that, again, they all learn differently, but this is impacting them academically in a way that I really couldn't have envisioned before.
And not only are all three learning and having their own challenges, but they're all in the same household. That has to be extremely stressful as well.
You know, I think given their ages and the fact that we're blessed with, you know, devices and their own internet, they're doing okay that way, but we're the exception. I feel for so many stories I've heard from teachers who are teaching a class of 25 or 30 students remotely, and they have to ask their own two or three children in the house to pause their devices because it's slowing her down from teaching her students. So that it's not just time management, it's resource management and allocation and all these different organizational structures and skills that we didn't know we needed to apply in our own households are impacting a lot of people right now.
Living in New Jersey, what have you found as far as the teachers that you're talking to in the Garden State here? You mentioned how some were apprehensive, you know, early on to technology. Are you finding out that some teachers are really starting to blossom with technology at home?
I think so, Doug. But, you know, the thing is this, that great teachers are great teachers regardless of the circumstances. They roll with the punches. They know how to adjust. And there are a lot of great teachers that hadn't embraced technology to this point, but were still getting results. What's happening now is that those great teachers are being they're drinking from the fire hose, as I said before, with all these free offers of applications and apps and learning management systems. But because they're great teachers, they're taking a step back and planning. Because one thing we can't abandon as an educator is the need to plan effectively. And in New Jersey, more than other states, we're blessed with great resources. But I think what we're also learning is that the rapid migration to remote teaching and the challenges therein is proving that teachers enhance technology, not the other way around. Before, we had a little, teachers were fearful, what is technology going to do to us or change us? But now they're realizing that they're in control of this. It's up to them how they use it, when they use it, and how they adapt to its impact.
Explain LMS to us.
So LMS is an acronym for a learning management system. And a learning management system is essentially a cloud-based platform hosted on some remote server on the internet. And LMS companies create this platform where teachers can upload materials. They can communicate with students in chat rooms. They can administer assessments and tests and quizzes online. And they can build community through an effective learning management system, again, an LMS. They've been used historically in colleges and universities for over 20 years, but it was very rote in nature, where professors would just upload documents and then upload testing templates and have kids take online exams reflective of whatever materials were there, but they weren't very interactive. The LMSs, or an effective LMSs now, integrate a lot of tools that can enhance the student's learning experience, but it's really up to the teacher how he or she uses that toolbox. But the learning management system market, I think in many ways, failed schools, because most of these companies were looking at subscription numbers and revenue for years, and they weren't looking at efficacy of implementations. So I had a call with a superintendent 3 weeks ago who said to me, "Alex, I've invested over $400,000 in our learning management system in the last 3 years, and I just found out that over 400 of my 1,200 teachers never use their initial access codes." So I said to him, "Well, I think that's a challenge that you created, but also your LMS provider did not invest in efficacy implementation." So LMSs can be a blessing if they're implemented right and the right training's provided, but they can also be a hindrance if they're just there glorified virtual bulletin board.
We mentioned at the top of the interview that Eduscape is one of the best online learning businesses for kids in the country. How many schools are you dealing with, and where does this global reach go to?
Right now, we're working with approximately 330 districts around the country in Canada, and probably, I'd say, 5,000 schools, more or less. And we do work with schools, education systems in China, Portugal, Finland, and Poland. But primarily our market is here in the U.S. And I will tell you that Getting feedback from educators around the world, everyone is having similar challenges when it comes to accessibility, equity, and teacher professional development. The majority of teachers in China were having teach, and it's not just in China, but the ministry there is addressing this now, but it happens in a lot of places. But in China, they were trying to transpose their lecture-based rote model of teaching to students and transferring it online, where they were having a lot of their students stand, sit in front of their screens for 6 to 8 hours a day and lecture at them. And the ministry realized that this is something we need to course correct quickly. And now they've shifted billions of dollars to provide professional development for teachers there on how to remote teach effectively. And I think that's going to happen across the world, including in the U.S., where this new normal hopefully doesn't return to 100% remote teaching. But I think that we have to incorporate remote teaching and blended learning, where we combine face-to-face and online in a regular strategy going forward as an educator.
Yeah, I find it interesting because I was going to ask you before you even said that about where does the U.S. kind of compare with some of the other countries that you're hearing about? Are we on par? But you're saying basically the same challenges.
The same challenges exist globally, even in places like Finland, where they have the number one education system in the world, according to PISA. The kids there don't have a lot of technology, actually. They have phones, but they've achieved great things in their schools without a lot of technology and one-to-one programs. But one of the things they have a good handle on in school is social-emotional learning aspect of this, which means how are you feeling? And that's something that in the U.S. we really need to be mindful of is I see my students maybe through video, but how do I know how they're doing? How are they doing social-emotionally? How are they coping with maybe overhearing that a parent lost a job or is getting furloughed? How are they coping with sharing limited technology in the house that they never realized before was limiting to them? How are they realizing that maybe they don't have the most powerful internet package in the neighborhood compared to their peers? There's so many social-emotional issues that this creates that we can't ignore.
Speaking of emotional times for so many families who have lost loved ones to the coronavirus or COVID-19, what advice do you have for parents or teachers when dealing with students knowing that someone in their family has passed and maybe not even have any closure because they can't get close to them? What have you been finding out about that?
I've been finding out that teachers are playing a critical role in this, where if they learn of a student who's had a tragedy in the family, what helps the most is communication. And not close communication like text to text, but having meetups outside of the regular rigor of the virtual school day where kids can get together online and not learn, but communicate and talk about what else are they doing with their day? How are they keeping themselves occupied on the weekend? We need school districts to encourage teachers to allow for this to happen and build it into the school day. So that kids can almost have recess together online, allow for that communication. So what really helps is for, in the social-emotional side, is for educators to structure open communication and kind of like virtual recess online and not forget that kids need to vent in other ways. And maybe those kids make new friends through their classes and they can collaborate later online. It's the same thing with any kind of relationship, whether it's face-to-face or in other – it's communication. We need to facilitate more communication outside of the rigors of the school day and the curriculum.
Alex, have we found that any of the younger grades as compared to maybe high school, anyone being more difficult than others?
Again, another good question, Doug. The challenges lie with the younger grades for teachers, with K – pre-kindergarten through fourth grade students, because they may not be as comfortable using technology. You mean they'll grab a phone or an iPad or a tablet, but to reach those kids, it's a little more challenging online because, frankly, they get more easily distracted. So teachers need to rely more on interactive applications that align to their curriculum to engage students in learning and making sure that they're staying on task. So the younger the student, the more challenging it is to reach them online, and the more challenging for the teacher, frankly. And as we get older, as you get into the high school level, a lot of students in high school have been doing some kind of e-learning for a while. But I think what they're realizing now is when you're asked to collaborate online, it's a little different than self-pacing. So there's different disciplines that need to be put in place. So the younger the grade, more challenging for the teacher and the student. You really do need a parent, by the way, at those younger grades. And that's really tough to do. But if there's a parent or an older sibling that could facilitate teaching for the younger student, it's always helpful. And we've done a number of webinars, and they're all free. One of our webinars has been the parent as a remote learning aid. And it's been very popular because parents are struggling themselves. They're basically homeschooling because they have to keep their kids on task and disciplined and still getting up at the same times in the morning. You know, it's similar to when people transition to working from home. One of the tried and true principles is get up at the same time, get dressed, take a shower, do everything you would normally do if you were commuting, but have that structure in your regular workday when working from home. And that's what we have to do with students, especially the younger ones. Keep them on a schedule and keep them structured.
And where can people find these webinars?
Our webinars are called Continuity of Learning Webinars, and they can just go to our website, which is eduscape.com, eduscape.com, and they are all free.
You're an innovator, so is there something that you have learned already that maybe your program, your company hasn't offered, but you're already working on it?
We are working on creating a dashboard to facilitate teachers teaching remotely and online. And I can't announce the name of that platform yet, but the idea of the platform is to help teachers organize their resources different than a learning management system, more open-ended, where they can just build their own dashboard, go to the e-learning that they need to meet them where they are, and help them self-elevate, I call it, their practice when it comes to this, and start to build and curate resources that they can easily apply as they really adjust to this new normal, which I don't think is going to end. So from an innovation perspective, again, it's really this virtual portal to facilitate e-learning and remote teaching. Outside of that, we are working with New Jersey City University to launch a remote teaching certificate for teachers. So everything you need to know to be a strong remote teacher, and not anything you don't. And it's something that literally just today we were speaking with the dean of the professional studies program, Dr. Michael Edmondson, about at New Jersey City University.
Next, the last question. You deal with urban schools, and you know that there are many students who don't have the access to as much technology as they would want. How does that hamper them? We've talked to some educators that say that they can still do many creative things and are creative students. What's your advice to those families?
There's no good answer to that question, Doug, but I will tell you that, you know, you started by saying, what are they feeling and things like that. Sometimes kids don't realize what they don't have until there's situations like this, because in many urban areas, entitlement funds through the government have given a lot of funding to technology within their school building. And they really haven't felt the lack of technology at home until now, because even if they are loaned a device to take home, we then have to address, do they have internet access? And if I don't have internet access, can I use my parents' phone as a hotspot? But maybe my parents' phone is a pay-by-use phone, and it doesn't allow for that. So all of a sudden, these kids in urban areas are realizing, going through this emotional process of realizing, wow, maybe I have less than I thought, you know? And it's horrible because we really have to address these inequities. And I hope it's something we take away from this and not forget, because I'd like to see a lot of the telecoms step up more. They have wonderful foundations and they do a lot, especially our, you know, Verizon right in our backyard and AT&T. But I think there needs to be a program where kids in these urban areas are given Wi-Fi hotspots in these situations. And we allow for E-rate funding from the federal government, which exists at the tune of nearly $3 billion, to allow schools and districts to maintain banks of Wi-Fi devices in case this happens again.
And so the one final question I wanted to ask you, Alex, is you have your three children there in your home. What's been the toughest conversation you've had with them when it comes to talking about the coronavirus?
Is the unknown. Is the unknown about the virus, and how will this affect us after they say it's over? Meaning, will it happen again? Will it be something else? I have a daughter who's a senior in high school, and the other day I saw her prom dress hung up outside her closet, and that's when it hit me. And I thought, my God, I need to speak to her and have a conversation, my wife and I, about how are you feeling? You know, so it's impacted my kids in different ways. My son misses the social aspect of being at his university. And my youngest, who's a social animal, frankly, is just missing that the sports side of it. She plays an athlete. And all of a sudden, you know, she feels like she took for granted the freedom that she had to just go out and play lacrosse or soccer with her friends and be part of that social network. So it's impacting them in different ways, really around their own lens. So the lens of high school senior and how it affects and impacts graduation and their senior year. The lens of a high school sophomore who's playing sports and can no longer do that. And the lens of a third-year college student whose social life was really as vibrant through fraternities and other things as his academic life. So it affects them in different ways.
So if districts or schools are listening, say, I'd like to talk to Alex a little bit more about EdgeEscape, what can they do?
They can reach us through our website. They can email me directly. I'm pretty engaged on a day-to-day basis, and we're really enjoying helping districts and schools right now because we're solving these felt needs and challenges that they have in a constructive way, and we're not reacting. You know, Doug, a lot of districts and schools are reacting to this. They're not planning, and you can't abandon good planning because it will cost you time. So they can reach me just by emailing me at alex@eduscape.com, and I'm happy to have a conversation. We're happy to provide some direction and absolutely happy to partner with them.
EdgeEscape is based in Montvale, and we've been speaking with the CEO of EdgeEscape, Alex Urrea. Alex, thanks so much for not only giving us some advice when it comes to online learning and technology tools, but also sharing some of what's going on in your home.
Doug, thank you so much for your time.